Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Sulo Krishnamurthy, who'll be telling us a little bit about this year's Handy Care Walkathon. So tell me a little bit about HandyCare and what led to this year's walkathon.
Well, HandyCare is a Canadian registered charity. It was formed in the year 1992. So we have been doing this charitable work for the past 26 years. And the mandate of this organization is to empower, educate, rehabilitate, train, and make the job placements for starting with children and then going on to youth and adults with disabilities, either physical or mental disabilities. And so the children we started off 26 years ago, most of them have now gone through the system and they are gainfully employed. And this is all happening in rural India through an organization called Amar Seva Sangam, who offer direct services. So this is a rural area where the 100% of the beneficiaries are from poor background with below minimum wages. Mostly the parents who are just daily wage earners and things like that. So all this service is offered free to them. And so we have gone through several projects with Amar Seva Sangam, starting with education, building them schools and building them integrated schools and training teachers in special education and so on. And then rehabilitation on a simultaneous basis. Children with severe physical disabilities have gone through surgeries, medical rehabilitation, physiotherapy, occupational therapy and all that. Now we have majority of the children now have either cerebral palsy, autism or some other development delays and mental disabilities, and we put them through different special education and rehabilitation programs. And so we need funding for all this. And as we do fundraising every year, this year we'll be doing a fundraiser in the form of walkathon on June 17th in Mississauga.
So where will the walkathon take place specifically? How much?
Yeah, it's going to be in the Erindale Park. This is on Mississauga Road and Dundas intersection. And this is the same park we have been doing the walkathon for the past several years. And it's for adults, it's a walk consisting of 5 kilometers or less spaces to walk less. And we also have a children's walk. They walk 1 to 1.5 kilometers. And we have lots of activities for the children and adults in the, games, face painting, henna tattoos, things like that. So it's really a fun day for the whole family. So this is a fundraiser where we get a lot of young families with young children who love to play outdoors and have lots of fun. And the funds we raise will be going towards our latest program, latest project which we started about 4 years ago. This is a project called Early Intervention for Children with Developmental Delays, which includes cerebral palsy, autism, Down syndrome, and all that. And if we catch them early and start the rehabilitation in the form of physiotherapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, sensory integration, and so on, at a very young age, like in a few months after their birth, then the progress is significant, and the results are very, very encouraging. So this is one we started in the year 2012-13, and it's been going very successfully. Right now, we have 700 children enrolled in this project, and so we need this funding to carry on with the project. And another major component of this project is it is being funded by Government of Canada through Grand Challenges Canada. We applied to them. They initially ran a pilot program for a year and a half, and they were very, very happy. And so we are on the phase two of the GCC matching program. Matching in the sense every dollar Handicare raises, the government matches it by another dollar. So every dollar someone donates becomes $2. And everyone gets a tax receipt because we are a registered charity. And any donation of $20 and above, we issue tax receipts, which they can use with their tax return. And we hope to generate a lot of funds because initially we started with just 50 children 4 years ago. It's grown to 700 children, so we need a lot of funding, and we hope to achieve that through this fundraiser.
So, if you could, one sec. Has there been any success moment within this project that really stands out for you? Anything the project has accomplished that would encourage people to become involved?
Yeah, there's lots and lots of success stories. As I say, when we catch the children at a very young age, like 5 months, 6 months, when they miss the milestones, the doctors can recognize, the parents can recognize. And as soon as we get them into this early intervention program, the better the benefit the child gets. Lots of children who would have otherwise become much worse, and they wouldn't have had any other recourse because the parents don't have the financial ability to take them to private therapies or doctors in India are private. And so we offer all the services. So out of the children that we have supported through this project over the past 4 years, more than 50% of them have gone into the integrated school. That means they have been included in the inclusive school where they study along with the normal children. Of course, they do need, some of them need special tutoring on the side, but it's been a great successful story. And how someone can get involved, we have volunteer programs. They can come and volunteer with us during the fundraiser. Or they can do some office volunteering with the support. Because our organization is a volunteer-driven organization. We are 8 of us on the board, and none of us take any salary. It's all voluntary work. And I have resigned my job 26 years ago, and I'm doing this full-time, on a voluntary basis. And all the other members, they do have other jobs, but then they pitch in their time during evenings, weekends, and this is how this organization is run. So we do welcome volunteers to help us out with some of the tasks, especially during the fundraising program. There's lots of help needed at the park, doing face painting, henna tattoos, organizing games, and for both children and adults. And so we have done yoga and tai chi also in the park. So that's some area people can get involved. There are lots of ways of getting involved. All they have to do is contact us at info@handicareintl.org. That is info@handicareintl.org. or email us. That is the email. So if they can email us or visit our website at www.handicareintl.org. So they can look into all the different projects we run and the different programs. And more details on the walkathon will be posted on the website soon. We do have the basic information so they can contact us and get involved and help us out and have fun at the same time.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. The fact that Handicare is putting together something as accessible as a walkathon to help these people with disabilities who could be halfway around the planet given where their work is based from speaks to the fact that Sulo and her organization really do have a heart for this work. For the fact is, it's easy to look at a statistic and say, there are too many people with disabilities, we'll never help them all. But if you look at a child going in for this walkathon, you look into their eyes, suddenly a very human face comes into the picture. And seeing that human face, you come to realize these are just people. People with hopes, dreams, potentials, and yes, even a future waiting to be discovered. Now, fact is, we can make one of two choices. We can choose to stand beside them and say, I want to create for what is to be, or we can turn away, just deny that there's a problem, let somebody else do it, because somebody else is sure to come along and do that. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandiLink, numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages. And as
the Windsor Youth Center is a free drop-in community center for homeless and at-risk youth in the Windsor, Essex area. The WYC assists people with many important things, such as replacing identification, housing applications, apartment searches, and resume writing, as well as providing meals, snacks, and a safe space for youth to come together. The Windsor Youth Center is located at 1247 Wyandotte Street East and is open Monday to Saturday from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. For more information, visit their website at thewindsoryouthcenter.org or give them a call at 226-674-0006.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, a Windsor-Essex organization devoted to providing athletic and social opportunities to individuals with disabilities. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Sulo Krishnamurthy from Handicare International. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Kathleen Martin Guinness from the Canadian Disability Participation Project. So tell me a little bit about the Disability Participation Project.
Sure. So the Canadian Disability Participation Project is a community university research partnership funded by the Social Science and Humanities Research Council of Canada. It brings together over 60 community-based organizations and university-based researchers working together to study, understand, and advance participation by people with physical disabilities in the areas of sport and exercise, community mobility, and employment.
So, what are some of the common barriers facing a person from getting involved?
So common barriers right across those three themes, there are so many. I think one of the biggest barriers that people with disabilities face are attitudinal barriers from society, just society's perception that a person with a disability can't participate in certain sports or exercise or might need so much assistance in the workplace that it's not viable to hire them. I think those attitudes alone constitute one of the biggest barriers right across the board in any realm that people with disabilities face. And the unfortunate part is that these negative attitudes are in fact stereotypes with very, very little grounding, if any, to them. So one of the, I think one of the most important things we need to do is to show society, to educate society that people with disabilities with support are capable of participating just to the same and full extent as people without disabilities. Beyond the social attitudes and stereotypes, I think probably the most common barriers are barriers due to the environment, environmental structural barriers that make it difficult for people with disabilities to access and to get to places of employment, of recreation, or even just to get out and about around their neighborhoods or around their communities.
So how do you go about tearing down the myths surrounding disability life?
Oh, that's a great question. So I've done a lot of reading and a lot of thinking on this, and I think from a scientific perspective, we know that oftentimes these negative attitudes and negative stereotypes, people hold them, but they don't even know they hold them. And I think we need to be careful about blaming people about holding negative attitudes and negative stereotypes. I think some of these negative attitudes and stereotypes are just the simple, simply due to us not seeing people with disabilities in various aspects of life. For example, how often do you turn on the TV and see, a person with a disability in the workplace? Or how often do you go to your gym and you see people with disabilities there, or even pictures of people with disabilities being physically active? Until that becomes a norm that people see all the time or hear all the time or think about all the time, our brains don't become wired to associate sport, recreation, workplace, neighborhood mobility with people with disabilities. Rather, we are exposed to because of the lack of exposure we have to seeing people with disabilities in those situations, I think a lot of the times our brains automatically make assumptions, make these stereotypes that about how people with disabilities behave or what they can or cannot do. So I think, as I said, I've given this a lot of thought, and I think one of the most important things that we can do is to, in the media, in advertising, in virtually every aspect of life, is to make sure that people with disabilities are portrayed as participating, and to make that the norm, that if a person with a disability, for example, wants to go to a gym environment or to a public fitness center, that it's a warm and welcoming environment, so that we start to ensure that more people with disabilities are there. And as the non-disabled community sees people in these different situations, they begin to recognize that it's the norm.
So, in your time with the Participation Project, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Sure. So perhaps there have been several, but I think one of the ones that I got most excited about is our sport and exercise team has spent a lot of time trying to identify what makes for a good quality participation experience for children, youth, adults with disabilities. We see too often people coming in to participate in an activity, and they're often left on the sidelines rather than engaged. And so they spent a lot of time trying to figure out what that was and to looking at how people positively experience sport and exercise participation. And one of our young scientists had done some work with military veterans who had been injured and were subsequently experiencing disability after combat. And her work had such a positive impact that when Pontieri was in Canada for the Invictus Games in the fall, she actually spoke about her research, and he highlighted it as being exemplary in highlighting the impact that physical activity can have on veterans and other people with disabilities, and I think really shone a spotlight on the potential for sport and exercise to have a positive role for not just veterans, but for people with all disabilities.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure thing.
At the request of an audience member, I wanted to share a thought with you folks. Disability is a lot like the universe. It's 10% what you can see and understand and process, and 90% what you can't. The trick is to actually believe in the other 90%. fact is, these organizations, these individuals, are paving the way for a better tomorrow. They're stepping outside themselves and saying, these people with disabilities have the right to be involved in a workplace scenario or athletics or what have you, really. The truth is, we're only cutting off our own feet to deny them this opportunity. Fact is, it's easy to say it's too expensive to make my building more accessible or to come up with workplace accommodations. A one-time expense might cost you a couple of $100 at the outside, but someday when a person with a disability wanders to that business and wants to make use of it, consider the profit there is to be made. And I'm not talking financials. I'm talking about the profit of recognizing the value of another human being. That profits our hearts, our minds, and our souls, because our ideals and our actions will actually match. Truth is, it's fine to have it all on paper and to say, yay, ain't we great? We've done what we legally have to. But is that all there is to it? Just tossing the turkey bone and leaving it at that? Is it really just a matter of once in a while saying we understand, agreeing it's a tragedy that there's not more inclusion, and moving on? Or do we take it to heart? Do we recognize these could be members of our own family? They could be us, for criminy's sake. How hard is it to look away when you see a child with a disability saying, I want to do this in the future. I want to be something better. Can you really look at that child and say, sorry, you don't move like us, you don't talk like us, or you don't think like us, so yeah, we're not going to help you. Are we really going to do that, my friends? That I call the impossible standard. Creating barrier after barrier after barrier, finding reason after reason after reason not to include somebody, till you get to a place where nobody's included at all. Those who create walls that high cannot get over themselves. Now, it's really a great story we heard about the Disabilities Participation Project. The name says it all. They have the right to participate, to be included, to be something better. And it's not a matter of one group in society is entitled to this versus another. I maintain there should be equality, equal consideration. Not one group has more rights than another. Not to the point where one group takes priority over another. But it's fair to say that the able-bodied shouldn't have that either. Just because they get around a little bit differently does not make them more of a person. Same blood, same organs, same hopes, same dreams. They come into this world, they go out of this world. They are people, just as those with disabilities are. Recently, my friends, I was contacted by a fan of the show who didn't necessarily want to do an interview, but she told me how her epilepsy was impacting her in the workplace. The fact is, she was having a little trouble with hand-eye coordination and some of the more physical tasks. But I maintain she, like anyone in a workplace scenario, has the potential to learn and to grow. The words reasonable accommodation, they don't just mean a set of laws we're answerable to. What they do mean is taking the time, talking to workers with disabilities, asking the question, is there something I can do to be of better support? Can I take a little time to train you? What do you think would help your situation? We all have the potential to contribute in this world. It's just a matter of finding the right way to reach us. And an employer should have the heart for their staff. I mean, my own work at the ICHA. I've been lucky. I've had a boss who absolutely has shown a genuine respect and understanding for what disability means. And I find it's a lot easier when you come in with a frame of reference. It's affected someone in your family, or you've done a lot of study about it. It's easy because you have a reference point. But if you're just building as it comes, it's no less valid of a way to learn, because in time you'll find that these workers are as capable and as strong as anyone you could possibly have around. Now, in some cases, it might be difficult for them socially, depending upon the nature of the disability. Not everyone does so well in a group workplace situation. Now, that's something that has to be taken into consideration, but it all depends upon how well trained everyone is. If they understand that sometimes something might be said in the heat of frustration, that it's not meant to be necessarily offensive, that this person's just trying to respond to their own needs as anyone else would, just take it with a grain of salt, my friends. Look at the totality of the person's capabilities. Don't let one moment of frustration, or they're asking an extra question because they want to learn or process, don't let that lead you to think less of them, because they are strong, capable, and maybe even determined people. The question is, they have the foundation of a great worker. How are we going to build upon that? My ranting aside, folks, the story does have a happy ending. This worker was able to learn a little something more about these physical tasks. Might not have been the easiest learning curve in the world, but ultimately she was able to create and to do her job. You know why? Because somebody took the time and the care. Somebody actually recognized this is not someone who's going to hinder the process. This is someone who makes the process happen. Any good employer knows that they sit on top of the heap, but they can't stay that way without those who build and put their hearts, their souls, their efforts into the day-to-day labor. And the truth is, more and more employers are recognizing this. Things like the AODA or the UN Convention are opening doors. And the question I put before you, do we keep those doors open as long as we think Big Brother's watching? Or do we close them the instant the pressure's off, the light's off? Do we just put on a good public face? Or, like in this story, do we take the time? Do we train? Do we work with? Do we foster their abilities? Really, that is the question, and it's up to each of us to answer that. For the fact is, no two businesses are alike, no two staffs are exactly alike. You can have a Tim Hortons franchise run by people with disabilities, two completely different locations, two completely different setups. Why? Because disability is unique. The person is unique. Their response, they're rising to the challenge, and the support of those around them will be unique. But in all cases, it is required. But it's not just one way, our providing support to them. They provide support to us. They learn, they grow, and they might even be grateful to those who have helped them. They might even take on an extra task when someone's tired or just not feeling well enough to do the job. It can happen. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it. We'll see you next week, folks.